I'm Daniel Chacon.
And I'm Tim Hernandez.
Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire.
We're excited to announce that our guest today is Nuala O'Connor.
We're going to be calling her in Galway today.
In Galway. Okay, good. And she'll be talking to us about her third novel, Miss Emily.
And her first American published novel. I mean, she's had a collection published here, but this is her first novel in the U.S., put out by Penguin. It's called Miss Emily, and it's about the relationship between Emily Dickinson and a fictional maid named Ada. And the chapters go back and forth, and it's a wonderful read.
It's a fictional reimagining, we could say.
And she writes Emily Dickinson from the first person, which is really, if you think, it's kind of brave.
That is. It's bold, yeah.
And she pulls it off. There's no question about it. She knows her Emily Dickinson.
Believable. Totally believable.
And, you know, it makes me think, as a writer, you know, I have writers that I admire that I, you know, that are kind of icons.
Yeah, I think we all do.
Yeah, that we put pictures of them on our desks or on our walls. Like I have your picture.
Right. Oh, yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
You're one of the writers I admire very much.
Yeah, I have yours too.
And you probably drew a little mustache
that's
on
right.
it, little devil horns.
That's right.
But like, for example, Borges, you know, Borges is certainly, you know, one of my favorite writers, you know, been very influenced by him. Kafka. You know, many and you, I'm sure, have, you know.
I do.
And I'm wondering if there's this moment where, as writers, we imagine the lives of those writers that we admire. And if there is maybe this kind of innate impulse for a fiction writer to want to write a novel or a fictional account of the writers they admire. Have you ever had that impulse?
I have, but I think mine is sort of a slanted version of that, really. My impulse has always been kind of, I've been more curious about having sort of these make-believe conversations with the writers more than like fictionalizing their lives, really kind of fictionalizing a conversation I've had with them, you know. And so, you know, for me, it's a picture of John Reed, who was a sort of a reporter slash, I guess maybe the early sort of new journalism kind of writer, you know, and he still is up there in my office, and I have many, many fictional conversations.
That's
actually,
nice.
To me, they're
like
real
that.
Conversations.
Yeah. That's awesome.
He just doesn't respond.
You know, that's funny because it reminds me of when I first started teaching creative writing. It was at the community college level.
Right.
And I had this student who certainly thought he was much more talented than perhaps he had developed at that point.
Right,
you know, maybe he could ultimately be very talented. Who knows?
Sure,
but I remember he told me, he goes, okay, I just wrote this new story. It's going to be awesome. It's a conversation between Jim Morrison, Nietzsche, and Einstein. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I don't want to have to read it. Yeah. And sure enough, it was very superficially representing
superficial.
Each one. But nonetheless, I think that impulse is something that we have, whether it's an imaginary conversation. I know I wanted to write a story about George Eliot.
Really?
Yeah.
What made you want to write a story about him?
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, sure.
You know, my degree's in political science.
Oh, and, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day.
After I got my degree, I decided I wanted to be a writer instead of go to law school, which I had planned on doing.
Right.
And so one of the first classes I took, a graduate level, was a George Eliot seminar. And we read all the thick and a few thin novels by George Eliot, a novel a week. It was really very challenging. But I kind of thought, well, you know, I kind of like this woman.
Right.
You know, I mean, the fact that she had to change her name to – you know, to so she would be accepted. And she had these themes that I would always just kind of like uncover. And I felt this affinity with her. And I thought, you know what? She was intensely intellectual.
Right.
And I thought it'd be nice to write a novel about her falling in love with the mailman.
The mailman.
Some simple guy, you know. And so what would that kind of relationship be? But of course, it was a silly idea, so I never
did.
And
it would have been written from the mailman's perspective, in the first person, you know, as you as the mailman.
No, I was actually going to, hey, what are you trying to say? It was going to be from George Eliot's perspective.
No, I'm just kidding.
But you wrote a novel, not from Jack Kerouac. I always have
Kerouac,
trouble saying that.
Jack.
That is not from his perspective, but is from the perspective of somebody in his life.
Right.
And I imagine that might have come about because you
totally.
Kind of...
That's right. That's exactly, that's how I thought of that as you asked me that question, because, you know, I was a fan of Kerouac. He was one of the first, actually, On the Road was probably one of the first books I cared to really read through that I wasn't assigned, you know, as a 17-year-old.
How come you don't use Verdant more often? Doesn't everyone who reads that always say, oh, look at the Verdant Hills?
Verdant. But I'll start using that more often, yes. No, and, you know, he was one of the books that I wasn't assigned as a teenager that I just gravitated towards and read. And after that, I was a fan of Kerouac's, and it wasn't until I was, you know, 30 years old that you know, the image of, or at least the character he has in there of the Mexican girl, Terry, right. that suddenly I found a way to sort of enter a real conversation with Kerouac's work, I think. And so, and it was through this woman that he, a real woman who he once dated for 2 weeks, B. Franco, who was from Fresno, where mm-hmm. I'm from, and also right. where you're from. Yeah.
You know, I read this interview by Don DeLillo, you know, the fiction writer, great American fiction writer. And
sure.
he was, he says he was writing one of his novels. I forget which one he was writing, but it was influenced largely by Borges. And he had a Borges right. picture
oh, wow.
on his desk. And every day he would look at that picture and then he would start writing, would start writing. And then he said in this interview, he says that the moment that he typed in the very last line of the novel, the Borges picture fell off the wall.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, kind of like, it's over.
Wow,
it's
that's
over.
Great.
And you know, and you know, you have to believe him. I mean, you know,
he's
probably not lying, but,
yeah, he's
but
believable.
You know, I think that there is, on some level, a connection that we have with other writers, perhaps yeah. because we enter archetype together. We enter these landscapes that are imaginary mm-hmm. and that are full of imagery mm-hmm. and full of,
right.
you know, that perhaps there is a relationship that is stronger than just an emotional relationship.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think landscape for me is probably one of the big, I think, sort of things I feel that I've always felt sort of in common or that have resonated with me in terms of even Kerouac's uh-huh. work or Steinbeck's work, who are two writers that I've looked at. And I think early on for me, as I read Kerouac's sort of depictions of the San Joaquin Valley in the 1940s, you know, my own family being from that same area for so long, and even Steinbeck's depictions even earlier right. in the 30s, all these things about landscape and its people were the first things that sort of pulled me into wanting to have a conversation in the first place.
Right. You know, I teach Kafka a lot. And right. Franz Kafka is not easy to read. Most people know him from his Metamorphosis
right.
story. And most people who know that story have never read it.
Right.
Like if I ask most people, how does that story end? They're not going to be able to tell me, right? Because they, you know, but he's so part of our collective consciousness.
Totally.
You know, whether we read him or not, we, you know, he is very important
yeah.
For the way we think.
Yeah.
And I tell students, when you're entering a Kafka story, look around. Enter into that landscape. Look around. You know, look at the shapes and the smells and the sights.
Right.
And look out to who else might be in that landscape, and you'll run into Borges.
Oh, you'll run
and
into
you'll
Borges.
Run into Charles Dickens, you
yeah,
know, and you'll
right.
run into these other people, because right. I think when we enter into an imaginative landscape co-created by yep. an author that's come before us, we find other people down there, and that connection gets even stronger.
Sounds like a whole lot of unending rooms.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to our interview. Today we're talking to Nuala O'Connor.
And after that, we'll have Kitsani Montaño Sevilla doing Poem of the Week.
By Emily Dickinson.
By Emily Dickinson, yes.
Awesome. Stick around. It's going to be a great show.